Yeah.
I ain't belly, so you,
Richard, you've never looked better.
And I know this is a pretty substantial packet. I want to try and keep things brief. Touch on the high points and be able to answer any questions that you have. The current process that y'all have in place is the one that you inherited from DeKalb. It requires to, prior to initiating a study, a 20% petition from the neighborhood. After that petition is received, the neighborhood and staff gets together, comes up with a plan that everyone's amenable to. That plan's presented to the council. Council adopts, and then it's sent out to the neighborhood for petition again. If the neighborhood comes back with 65% support, then it goes for funding. The roads that would be eligible for that are any roads with a speed limit of 30 miles an hour or less, and they would need to show 85th percentile speed of 11 miles an hour or more. That's the speed at which the top 15% of drivers are meeting or exceeding. Traffic calming is an effective method of reducing speeds. It's not terribly effective at reducing volumes, but it brings the speeds down to a more appropriate level for a neighborhood level. It brings things back in line with more of a 25 mile an hour neighborhood speed. The two primary methods to effectively slow vehicles down is you have to deflect the car. You have to make it. You've got to either move vertically with a speed hump, or you've got to deflect it horizontally with pylons. Spacing is important with traffic calming devices. EMS needs to be consulted in order to make sure that any impacts to service routes are considered. And another consideration is LARP funding, local assistance resurfacing funds from the state. They won't resurface anything that has a device on them, but they will resurface a road. The devices, any speed humps or other devices would need to be taken out. The road could be resurfaced through the LARP program, and then you would need to reinstall and reconstruct the devices. One of the most common things that comes to us as staff and y'all as the governing body is requests for stop signs and road closures. And an always stop, it's a very cheap but very ineffective mandate. Stop signs are they're great at assigning right of way. They're very poor at actually getting people to slow down. They tend to spike speeds up in between them, and unless you've got a perfect grid neighborhood, you're not going to have your intersections at the spacing in order to get that speed lowered in between any of the devices. Road closure causes its own problems because a lot of traffic's like water. It takes a path of least resistance, and you close this path off, it's all going somewhere else. You squeeze a balloon, you're gonna push it somewhere else. So you have to consider very carefully when utilizing road closure as an option to try and reduce speeds. It's very effective at reducing volumes, but it's not great at reducing speeds. Some of the simpler options that y'all have available to you, lower cost options, narrowing the lanes by striping, things like radar devices that actively show the drivers what their speeds are, things like turn movement prohibition. When you start getting into your construction projects, that's when you start talking about more dollars. Entrance treatments, that are a very visual reference and let people know that the context of their driving environment has changed. Let them know that they've entered a neighborhood. Then you get into the active devices. You've got speed humps. Speed humps and speed cushions and intersection humps are your vertical deflection, your typical vertical deflection devices. The biggest difference between a speed hump and a speed cushion is the impact to your Firefox, your wide axle vehicles. Speed cushion can be set up so that it has minimal impact to fire trucks, but they're still going to have a negative impact to police response times. Intersection hump is largely the same thing, but you're replacing something like an always stop with a speed hump at an intersection. To talk about your horizontal deflection, that includes things like roundabouts, where you replace your always stop with an always yield. Center islands, or islands on the sides to narrow things down. I burned through the last half of that in order to try and be respectful of your time and let you look at this and provide us any questions at your leisure. Is there anything else that I can address for you?
No, not on my side. I'll open it up. I think what I was envisioning is discussion of our current policy on how we pay for these things.
I do have one question on this, but I think you're right. The real question is, what do we do when the next group of people comes up who wants speed humps? How do we decide who we fund and who we don't?
Absolutely.
Right. But I do have a question.
Please,
and the question I've got, it's really a to-do for low engineers. I'd like you guys to come back and suggest to us the places in Dunwoody where you think lane narrowing through restriping is worth considering. I think almost all of us would like to see traffic on our major arterials slow down. And if restriping selected roads would do that, and it's not terribly expensive, that might be a project we might even try to do in 2009. So if you guys can tell us, here's some stretches of land, of road that are the right width, that have the right, or are straight enough, or, you know, whatever, that'd be great to know.
Yes, we can provide that information.
We do have, and I forget their name, but the bicycle group who's doing an inventory of all the roads, and that's going to kind of coincide with this as well, because if we're going to narrow
We narrow it in order to put in a bike lane, and we may want bike lanes in more places than the road is shaped and pre-engineered to support, but let's at least find out where the road's going to support that stuff.
And there are a lot of locations where we may not be able to provide bike lanes, but we can provide a little bit more shy distance for bicyclists, provide a little bit more room on the shoulder for...
Right.
Yeah, a little more wheel room. All right, any questions for Alex on this?
And Todd?
Yeah. And just to follow up, you said that smart funds cannot be used for streets with traffic calming devices?
If they are on them, they have revised their rules so that if they're removed, they large surfaces, large speed funds would be available for
removal. So somebody other than the LARP funds has to pay for removal and then put in the back also?
Yes.
Again? I never had any idea on that. I think one of the things of lane narrowing, I just wonder, you know, some of you are very young, some of us are middle-aged, and, you know, I'm just wondering about a safety factor when you start narrowing the lanes as far as, you know, we all don't drive a straight line and stay right in there. I'm just wondering if that's if that is one of the cons. Is there a negative factor on safety, you know, as far as increased rate, accident rate when you narrow the lanes?
Crash rates are pretty even across the board based on lane widths. There have been a series of studies done by the Transportation Review Board that have shown that when you go down below 10 feet, is below a 10-foot lane is when you start running into increasing your crash rates under specific circumstances. But in most cases, a predominance of our roads are two-lane. 10 or 11 feet would be reasonable. Okay. You shouldn't experience a significant.
Right. Okay, any other questions for Alex? And
I just have one question.
Yes.
You talked about the impact that it has on speed. Do you have any studies that reflect what the impact of home values in areas that have speed bumps, what it does to home values in those areas? It seems to me like it really waves a red flag that you've got a traffic problem, a speeding problem through my neighborhood, so I'm going to put up a red flag in my neighborhood.
Actually, the best published study was published from research done in Gwinnett, and it was published in Institute of Transportation Engineers in the ITE journal. It showed that traffic calming devices have no significant impact to property values. For as many people as you're going to chase out of a neighborhood that has speed homes, you'll attract someone else.
I don't think that was the answer Danny was looking for. Okay.
Just one more quick point. Has there ever been any studies on the speed bump in front of a residential house that causes any problems with foundations or water lines, etc.?
I don't know of any studies, but I also don't know any of I don't know of any significant impacts.
I've got a neighbor. I sit on the front porch and I look over. And when the folks hit that speed bump right in front of the house with their SUVs, you can actually feel it a little bit. I was very surprised.
Well, it's something we can research.
Okay.
Just to wrap this up, this is a policy issue, really, how we're going to deal with this. And I think we need to just, take a look at this. Lots of public input, because we don't want to have, a mismatch, a quilt work of solutions to the city. To be consistent on this, really take our times on this, because you've got to pay for it. Each time you pay for this in some neighborhood, that's something else. If we're talking your capital budget, can we spend somewhere else? Also need to look at it in the totality of the city, not isolated incidents like this right now, but how all that fits into the master plan.
Okay, that's a good segue. Thank you, Alex. We appreciate your time. I think that's a good segue to maybe accomplish real quickly what I thought we were going to try to do today, and that's to talk about what's next. And we'll talk about Village Mill on the next item, but what do we do forward going? And let me kick this off with a bold and maybe not too popular suggestion.